Good evening, and we are up to Tessam and Aleph. We are in the Gemara on 9a. And if you look in the chat, I just shared with all of you a table, what I called it's listed as Killing Beshogig table. So it's written in Hebrew. You're welcome to look at it at your own leisure if you'll benefit from it. Essentially, what it does is we're going to talk about a few different categories of people. We're going to be talking about Jews. We're going to be, last time we talked about an Eved Kenani, a servant, a non-Jew servant. We talked also, welcome Zadie, welcome Toby, welcome Henry.
Thank you.
Last time we talked about, we're still doing the review from last time, just putting ourselves in context here so you didn't miss anything yet. So, and we talked about people who are non-Jewish, and then there's like these liminal stages between Jewish. It's not always a binary of you're Jewish, you're not Jewish, but there's people who kind of fall in these liminal categories. So a Kusi, the Samaritans, they are questionably Jewish. You have an Eved Kenani, a Canaanite servant. So until they are freed, should they ever be freed, they're sort of Jewish at that point. And then we have someone called a Ger Toshav. Unlike a regular Ger, which is a full convert, a Ger Toshav is somebody who accepted on himself or herself the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, the seven Noahide commandments. And if they adhere to it, it makes them a little bit better on our charts than a pagan non-Jew who is committing sexual morality, idolatry, murder, and all the fun stuff out there, apparently. So if you look in the chat, I put a chart over there which tells you exactly, if someone kills somebody, will they go to Gullus? Will they get killed? Will they be exempt? And we'll go through these ideas in the Gemara, but should that chart be accessible for you, it might help along the way. I did not find a chart similar to it in English, but again, if one of you has like maybe a newer version of Art Scroll, maybe it's in there. So we are familiar, hopefully by now, that if a Jew kills another Jew accidentally, beshogeg, then he goes to one of the cities of refuge. He goes to an Ir Miklat. But what about someone who is a Ger Toshav? Someone who is a resident in the land of Israel, but isn't Jewish, but is an ethical non-Jew who's abiding by the seven laws. So there's a very interesting line right at the end of the Mishnah on Ches Amud Beis on 8b. At the end of the Mishnah last time, we said, Hakol golan al yidei Yisrael, Yisrael golan al yideihen. So we said that Jews, a regular Jew, can go to Galus by killing a Kusi or a servant, and a Samaritan or a servant who kills a Jew goes into exile if they do it accidentally. However, the exception to this rule is Chutz mi Ger Toshav. If a Ger Toshav kills a Jew, then he does not go to Galus. The implication is that he does not qualify for this dispensation of going to Gullus. The baseline assumption is if I kill someone inadvertently, I should get capital punishment the same way if I kill them deliberately. But for Jews, there is this special exception to the rule that if you want to atone for your sin, you don't have to atone through capital punishment. If you go to a city of refuge, it's a special atoning process. But a Ger Toshav does not qualify for that. Also, we said, the Ger Toshav inogel aide Ger Toshav. If a Ger Toshav, however, kills another Ger Toshav, then he does go to Gullus. There is an atonement to go into exile for killing him. And that is exactly what the Gemara is going to analyze tonight. We are on the third line from the top on Tes Amud Aleph on 9a. Here we go. So Chutz Mi'adi Ger Toshav. Alma, we see Ger Toshav Ove Kochavim Hu. The implication from the Mishnah. So this is what the Gemara is going to seek to figure out. Is a Ger Toshav more similar to a Jew or to a non-Jew when it comes to the rules of going into exile? The implication from the Mishnah initially is I would say a Ger Toshav is a non-Jew because if they kill a Yisrael, a regular Jew, they do not go into exile. Rather, they get regular capital punishment. However, Ema Seifa, but how are you going to understand the next line in the Mishnah? Ger Toshav Gol Ayde Ger Toshav. But if a Ger Toshav is no different, if he's really considered no different than a regular pagan non-Jew, then why does he have any kind of gullus? Why does he go into gullus? Why does he go to the city of refuge when he kills a fellow Ger Toshav? A non-Jew kills a fellow non-Jew, gets capital punishment. So it's weird. A Ger Toshav in some ways is like a Jew, some ways is not. So Amarav Kahana, Lo Kashin. That's really what he answers. Kam Ger Toshav, Shara Ger Toshav. Kam Ger Toshav, Shara Yisrael. The circumstances are different based on who he kills. If he kills a fellow Ger Toshav, he goes into gullus. If he kills a Jew, he does not go into gullus. He gets capital punishment. And so a Ger Toshav is in this very unique category where he's better, according to some of the Rishonim, than a, so there's basically, I would say, if you look in that chart, there's a few tiers. There's your typical pagan non-Jew who many Rishonim say, at least in the Western world, doesn't really exist today. So a lot of the statements that the rabbis make against a typical Oved Kochavim, a typical non-Jew, may not be applicable today because it's referring to the pagans. What does that mean once you talk about Eastern religions? It's a little hard to argue paganism's completely gone. You go to the Eastern world, it's not really true. But then you have a non-Jew who's a tier higher. They are abiding by the seven Noahide laws, Shemes B'nei Noach. And then you have a Ger Toshav with someone who explicitly doesn't just happen to follow Shemes B'nei Noach. You know, a lot of people happen to not be murdering and committing sexual morality and idolatry and eating Aver Min HaChai, but he deliberately accepts upon himself the Shemes B'nei Noach because he believes that Hashem commanded it. That puts him on a higher tier. That's what a Ger Toshav is, according to many Rishonim. So that's what puts him in this liminal stage between not quite a non-Jew, but he's definitely far cry from being a Jew as well. So we're really talking about like a very ethical non-Jew. That's what we're describing here. And a similar discussion comes up in the next part of the Gemara, where basically it's a different version of this discussion, but getting to the same principle. Ika derami kri adadi. Some say that this conversation took place to resolve two contradictory verses in the Torah. And it's almost a very obvious issue over here, because in one pasuk siv lebnei Yisrael vilager latosha besocham tiena sheish harim, for the Jewish people and the ger toshav, the resident that dwells among them, we established are miklat, cities of refuge. So in this verse it groups a ger toshav along with regular Jews. Usiv v'haylechem ha'arim lemiklat, but then in another verse it says, and these cities of refuge shall be designated lachem, to you. What's the implication? I can infer lachem velo legerim, for you, the Jewish people only, but not for anyone who dwells among the Jewish people, not for a Ger Toshav. So how do we resolve the conflicting implications of both verses? Does a Ger Toshav get to go to Gullus if he accidentally kills someone, or do we just give him standard death penalty, standard capital punishment? So Amarav Kahana, Lo Kasha, Kam Beger Toshav Shahar Yisrael, Kam Beger Toshav Shahar Ger Toshav. In one instance, it's talking about where Ger Toshav kills a Jewish person, then he doesn't have recourse to go to the city of refuge, hence he's excluded. But the verse that includes a Ger Toshav for a city of refuge is when he kills a fellow Ger Toshav. Okay. And that ends that section of the Gemara. Let me pause.
Rabbi, is there like a political agenda behind this?
What do you mean?
Like, I sort of get the sense that the agenda behind this is that you really want to keep the resident aliens staying in their own backyard. If they're keeping to themselves, chances are they're not going to have so much opportunity to kill somebody. So you make the punishment worse if they kill an Israelite than if they kill one of their own. So it kind of, it's almost like encouraging them, stay on your side of the fence.
Right. Well, I guess it's, you know, do you want to go with the frumshot, or do you want to go with a more like, you know, historical approach? So, you know, obviously I'm not a historian, but
I want to go with the truth.
It's a good suggestion. the frum approach to it is, it's a gezeiras hakasev, and that's what the Torah said, and the rest is commentary. But I understand that, especially in this Gemara, there's a feeling that we need a little bit more elucidation rather than just being told, well, that happens to be how they darshan, how they derive it from the psukim. So
yeah, that's not doing it for me.
Not doing it for you. Okay. No. Anyone have any thoughts about the point Toby's raising? Anyone agree with her? Want to respond?
I think that the Torah places a higher value on a Jewish life than it does on the life of a ger toshav. And so your act has a greater evil to it, a greater seriousness when you kill a Jew. It's not a matter of having them keep to themselves. That keeping themselves is another issue having to do with Jews intermingling with non-Jews and maybe having their behavior rub off on us. But that's how I see it.
But that's not consistent though with allowing the Israelite to go to the Eir Miklat if he kills another Jew.
Yeah, yes it is consistent. Because if he kills another Jew, he is a more valuable person than the ger toshav, let's put it that way, bluntly. And so he gets a dispensation that the ger doesn't.
Right. So I think, you know, there's definitely, we could say the blunt way, like my grandfather suggesting that there's just it's a hierarchy, the same way that Kohanim are considered holier than Yisraelim, as my grandfather, as I know Zadie always liked to point out, rub it in my face. But my grandfather's a Kohen Am Yisrael, because my maternal grandfather. So you know where all the jokes are coming from. The other way, I guess you want to put it in, couch it in more tactful terms, if you'll buy it or not, it's almost that the standard, actually, some of the Achronim point out, and even the Aruch HaNer, I saw it in, he suggests, now the baseline is really everyone should get capital punishment when you kill some b'shogeg. And if you know, just it's a special like membership status. You know, you become a member of a shul, you get special perks, you get discounts when you come to events. And you know, Bimhir V'Yamina, we'll get that all back on board. So, you know, when you're a Jew, you get special membership perks by joining. And the Eir Miklat, as opposed to capital punishment, is a pretty good perk that comes along with the package. But yes.
Right. But if you're a Ger Toshav, you still get that benefit as long as you kill somebody on your side of the fence.
Right. So we're giving you a taste, you know, like this is like the initial package we give you, you know, the 10th month subscription, and then we see if you want to actually jump in. So, okay. Well, I won't run any further with the mushel. Okay. Going forward, we're in Minhi, still on the topic of Ger Toshav. So don't worry, we still have what to talk about. So we're going to now take, so we just dealt with a contradiction within our Mishnah. We dealt with a contradiction between two verses, and now we're going to deal with a supposed contradiction from a Braisa. From, again, the Braisos are the same time period as the Mishnayos, as the Mishnah. They're very early Tanyanic literature, but they are not codified. So we generally, if push comes to shove, we value a Mishnah over a Braisa that's codified as our Mishnah, but we generally try to assume that they are operating off the same principles, and there's a contradiction, we want to resolve that contradiction and get on the same page. So Ramini, Lefikach ger va'ovik ocham shahargu nehergen. So it says in a Braisa that if a ger, so actually the Hagoset Siyunim, they put in the word toshav over there, which makes sense. We're not talking about a convert, we're talking about a ger toshav, someone who is not yet converted. So a ger toshav, or a regular non-Jew, who kills someone inadvertently, they get put to death. They don't get to go to Eir Miklat. So Ketani ger demyata ovei kochavim. It sounds like from here, unlike in our Mishnah, a ger toshav has the exact same status as your typical pagan non-Jew. Ma ovei kochavim lo shan dekatal bar minei, lo shan dekatal delav bar minei neharag. Just like a non-Jew, doesn't matter if he kills a Jew, doesn't matter if he kills a non-Jew, if he kills any other human being, he gets put to death, even if he did it inadvertently. Afger lo shna dekatal bar minei, lo shna kadol dela bar minei neharag. The implication here also is, it doesn't matter if the ger toshav killed a Jew, and it doesn't matter if he killed a fellow ger toshav. He would be put to death, even if he did it inadvertently. That contradicts our Mishnah, of course, which says that a ger toshav who kills a ger toshav does not get put to death. He gets to go to Gullus. So how do we resolve this? So the way we resolve it, possibly, we're going to have two resolutions. One resolution is suggested by Rav Chista. Amar Rav Chista lo kasha. Kan shaharu derech erida, kan shaharu derech aliyah. Ah, in our Mishnah, why does the Ger Toshav go into exile when he kills a fellow Ger Toshav? Because it was derech yerida, right? Remember we talked about in the first Mishnah of the chapter? When you kill in a downward motion, you should have been more careful. And because of that, that's shogig, you go to gullus, you go into exile for inadvertently killing someone. But derech aliyah, when you do it in an upward motion, you're moving away from the target usually. Usually you're moving away from the target when you do an upward motion. So you don't go to gullus. The thing over here, though, is remember we said when we say that someone is exempt from going into exile, it can mean one of two things. It can mean either they're just off the hook completely, or it could mean that either they just don't get protected by the Ir Miklat, the city of refuge doesn't protect them, or maybe when we say you're exempt from the Ir Miklat, it's because, yeah, what you did was so bad, you can't atone for it by going to the Ir Miklat. Rather, you atone for it with capital punishment. And that's the implication over here. So, Derech Yerida di Yisrael, I'm sorry, let me just go back. Amar Chisa lo kasha, kan shaharu derech yerida, kan shaharu derech aliyah. Derech yerida di Yisrael gali, yunam yisagi lei begalus. So, a Jewish person who kills inadvertently gets to go to exile. So too, a Ger Toshav who kills a fellow Ger Toshav inadvertently. Derech aliyah di Yisrael pater, but sorry, one second. Yunami Sali Begolis. Derech aliyah di Yisrael pater hu nerag. So, but a Jewish person who would be exempt, he, however, gets put to death. And Rava doesn't like this point over here. Rava doesn't like the point that's being made. Amar le Rava, Lav kavo chomerhu, ma derech yerida di Yisrael gali, unami sagi le begalus, derech aliyah di Yisrael pater, ihu neharag. So the issue over here is that whereas a Jew gets off the hook by killing somebody, biderech aliyah, a Jewish person who kills biderech aliyah going in upward motion gets let off the hook. They don't even need to go to an Ir Miklat. Why is it then that a Ger Toshav who kills Derech Aliyah going upwards, I would say also he should be let off the hook. But instead, Derech Aliyah killing an upward motion, which is usually more lenient of a verdict that you get, not only does he not get to go into Gullus, but we give him capital punishment as a result. Something over there just doesn't fit logically, Rava says. Now, do we understand? I just want to make sure that's clear. Do we understand why that's problematic?
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So, Ela Amar Rava Ba'omer Mutter. So Rava says, why are we being so harsh on this Ger Toshav in the case of the Braisa? Rava, because of this, has to give a different resolution to understand why in the Braisa is the Ger Toshav being put to death, even if he inadvertently only killed one of his own, which our Mishnah says he shouldn't. What's the Braisa talking about? Not where he killed Derech Aliyah, but rather El Amarava, but Omer Mutter, where he said, you know what, I thought I was allowed to kill that other Ger Toshav, but turns out there wasn't a bounty on his head or whatever. I thought he was, you know, someone I was allowed to kill for whatever reason, but turns out I wasn't allowed to kill him. And remember, we actually had this dispute a while ago. Remember we had a Machlokas between Rav and Abaye, we're rehashing it right now. If I think I'm allowed to kill somebody, and then I kill them as a result of that misconception, it's a pretty bad mistake to make when you think about it, and then I find out later, oh God, I was not allowed to kill that person. He was a good, innocent guy, not supposed to be killed. So according to Rava, that's Karov Lemezid. That's almost basically a deliberate action. You should have looked into the matter before you killed that guy. You know, we had to be really careful before we pull the trigger. Whereas Abaye, Amar le Abaye, Omer Mutter Anasu, someone who thinks, who mistakenly, erroneously believes that he was allowed to kill someone and then kills him, the opposite extreme, the opposite pull. Rather, it's an Ones. I couldn't have known any better. I was told I was allowed to kill this guy. I thought I was doing the right thing. So Amarle, Rava says, no, Shani Omer, Mutter Karov Lemezid. When you kill someone erroneously, that's Karov Lemezid. You should have looked into the matter first. You should have analyzed it. You should have known beyond the shadow of a doubt that it was that you were allowed to kill him. So va'azal tamayu, and actually both Rava and Rav Chista, so Rav Chista and Abaye, we should really group them together. They're on the same team over here. See, because since Rava and Rav Chista disagree in principle, that's why they had to give two different resolutions of the Braisa. Va'azal tamayu, the itmar. If I thought I was shooting an animal, but it turned out it was a human being. Kanani v'nimsa ger toshav. I thought it was a Canaanite, but it turned out it was a ger toshav. Rava omer chayiv. Rava says you get capital punishment for doing that. Omer mutter kar v'mezidu. Why? Because that's basically mezid, as we said before. That's deliberate. Rachista omer hutter, because omer mutter anusu. The same reason as Abaye. And so for Rava, who thinks that when I mistakenly kill somebody, I am held accountable for it, I get capital punishment, Rava could resolve our Braisa by saying, why is a Ger Toshav put to death when he accidentally kills somebody? Because here, it's not a typical case of accidental. Here, it was deliberate. He just mistook, he thought it was an animal, but it was really a person. He should have been careful before he fired. Whereas Rav Chista,
like the taser.
Oh yes, there is what to discuss over there. Oh, Henry, it looks like you're saying something. You're muted.
I was just waiting for someone to bring up some current event analogy. Yeah. Very good. Yeah.
But you see, I think obviously, I think we could all agree we'll put politics on the side for a moment. But let's actually address the case seriously, which I think is what you meant. So in the case, right, in the case of the right, I know we're all serious over here. We're not trying to derail. So okay, the case of the taser, I think it's an interesting question. It might be a little different. It's not like she thought I'm allowed to shoot the guy. I mean, assuming that the video footage, what came out was she thought she was reaching for the taser, assuming that's what happened. It's not like she. Well, it'd be analogous to our cases if she thought she was allowed to actually shoot him with a pistol. Here, she intended to grab the taser. So I would say that actually might be closer to a shogig kind of case.
There was no hasra. I mean, if you really want to make an analogy, there was no warning, no hasra. Right?
If you really want to get to it, she's also not Jewish, so she doesn't have gullus either. Let's say she was.
You've got two resident aliens, and she killed one of them by reaching mistakenly for the wrong.
Yeah, you see, there's a few other factors in here because, again, going back to our typical case of chopping wood in a forest, it's a very low pressure environment. I could have taken an extra few seconds to make sure the screws were in tight on my axe. The case, I watched a body cam footage when I was watching the news on TV. It was a very quick, you saw the gentleman was, they're trying to subdue him. And then he broke away and ran into the car. So they had to, and he already was literally on the gas pedal driving away. So they had to make a split second decision. And I think that might be a factor we need to consider that makes it less analogous to the typical case of shogig. Typical case of shogig is, of course you had time to examine your axe. Here, there's less time to examine. So a lot of what the court's going to be dealing with is that actually a genuine mistake?
Except it wasn't like they were worried he was going to go and kill somebody else and they had to prevent a crime.
I need to look into this more. And, I'm not the personal injury attorney here, so you can tell me if I'm wrong.
That's not a personal injury question.
From previous... There have been instances that you could actually watch videos of where police officers pulled over someone, subdued him, and then the guy broke the constraints, whatever it was, runs back into the car, and it pulls out a pistol and shoots the officers.
Yeah, but those are so few. Those are so few.
That was not this case.
I read a statistic. I think out of like 10 million stops, there have been 10. Maybe 10 police officers that have been killed out of 10 million stops. This is a totally different story. And I think that, the real question is if someone, if this is getting way off topic.
Yeah,
this is getting way off topic.
Anyway, we'll finish your point, and then we'll return back to the Gemara. But
if you've got someone who's pulled out of his car for, you know, whatever it was, an expired license plate or something like that, and he's being manhandled by two police officers, and then there's another one on the scene as well. He's terrified, and he made a bad decision to get back in the car because he was terrified. Whether or not a police officer would ever be justified in that situation of tasing him when there's someone else in the car, and even if she used the taser and it caused him to then get into an accident and injure the other person in the car, that judgment is in my mind something that needs to be questioned. But the whole situation was escalated in a way that led to this tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think Jeremy, you make a good point. And I think the point to take away is that there's a lot of factors, and it's a very unfortunate situation, needless to say. I don't need to say that even, but needless to say. But I do at least appreciate the fact that we're taking some of the principles that we're learning in the Gemara and asking, what are the practical applications? And actually, there's a book called Headlines out there by David Lichtenstein. He has a podcast also where he addressed these kind of questions. And what was the Stand Your Ground case that was like a decade ago?
In Florida.
So he has an essay on that, a halachic essay, basically taking these principles from Makos, from Sanhedrin, and applying it to the case and trying to measure both sides.
Is he related to Aaron Lichtenstein?
No, I don't think so. Mm. Common name, but a lot of good Lichtensteins out there. Anyway, okay, so let's get back to the Gemara. Good discussion, and I'm glad we could bring up current events and also talk about it in a measured way, which I always appreciate with this kind of group.
Rabbi, I don't know if you want to wait till the end, but I wanted a clarification about the Ger Toshav.
Sure.
Can I ask you now?
If it's a clarification question, I'm happy to take it.
I think you said that the Toshav was, or your grandfather said the Toshav is a more valuable member of the Jewish religion society than the Ger is?
No, not than a Ger, than a regular pagan. A Ger, someone who fully converts, is a full Jew. So they are on the same level as a regular Jew in the hierarchy. There's no distinction. They are Yisrael for all intents and purposes in these laws. So this refers to, I know it sounds similar, but it's very different. A Ger Toshav is a non-Jew who's accepted the Shemitz Menoach to abide by the seven Noahide laws. So I'm glad we clarified that. I don't want you walking away thinking that a Ger is different than any other Jew in this respect. They are the exact same thing as a regular Jew.
The reason I was thinking about it, because I remember it said, on the Torah about Abraham, Ger v'toshav anochi imachem. So it said, right. Ger v'toshav, and according to the explanation here, the Jew in this world is always an alien, for his allegiance is to Hashem, and the goals are set forth by the Torah. So right. I was thinking that the Ger is the more valuable as far as I don't know, as far as standards are concerned.
Okay. Well, you know, definitely a Ger is a regular Yisrael for all intents and purposes. So I'm glad you raised that, because I definitely don't want you walking away thinking there is a distinction in this respect. But speaking of Avram, I'm glad you brought up Avram. You brought up Abraham, because he's going to be brought up in the Gemara very shortly. So let's move forward.
Okay.
So just let's keep score once again. Remember, Rava thinks if someone thinks that they're allowed to kill somebody, but they weren't allowed to, then that person is put to death. Abaye and Rav Chisda think that if I was mistaken, I thought I was allowed to kill that person, turns out I wasn't, then I am let off the hook. Very different approaches to this, diametrically opposed. So now they're going to try to marshal proofs one way or the other. Isve Rava or Rav Chisda. Rava challenges Rav Chisda. So it says, remember how Avimelech, he abducts Sarah from Avraham in order to take her, because Avram said, she's my sister. Simon says, oh, okay, if she's your sister, that means I could take her. So God says to him, that you now will die on account of taking Sarah, and taking this man's wife. My love be de Adam. So Avimelech is a case of Omer Mutter, where Avimelech said, I thought I was allowed to take this woman because she was not married. Turns out, how was I supposed to know she's a married woman? So Rava, who says that you should be held accountable even for things that you could have researched to the nth degree. So Rava says, we see from the fact that God was going to hold Avimelech accountable, that he was held accountable according to halacha, that even though he thought he was allowed to take Sarah, turns out he was not allowed to do that. So we see from here proof that if I think I'm allowed to do something, I could still be held accountable as performing that action deliberately. Here is not talking about murder. Here is talking about adultery, but same idea. It's an offense that is punishable by death. So it's the same principle in play.
He wasn't held accountable.
Right. Okay. Very good. So that's the next part.
He committed the adultery.
Right. So that's actually.
If you hadn't do it, you're going to die.
Right. So ultimately, right, you have to understand. So there's two ways to understand this. The fact that God doesn't hold Avimelech accountable in the end actually is a proof to the other side, as we'll see shortly. I mean, the fact that God ultimately did not kill Avimelech in the end of the day shows that you aren't accountable if you thought you were allowed to do something. It turns out you weren't allowed to do it.
But he did. But he did have a problem. He did give him. He had some sort of a problem that Abraham prayed for him.
Right, but that's definitely a far cry from death penalty, nonetheless.
Right, okay. But he did get something for
it. He did get something. You are correct. That's a good point. So the response that Abai and Rechista would give is, lo bidei shemayim. Rather, what's he being punished? He's not being punished in the court down here. He's being punished by God up there. So if he's being punished by God, then that's not enough of a proof. It's a bigger chiddush. It's a bigger novelty for me to tell you that you'll be punishable by court versus there's many times I'm not punishable by the court, but God will hold me accountable even if I get through a legal loophole. There's instances in the cases in Bava Kamma where if I shout in someone's ear and it's a very weird case. It causes someone to become deranged because of it. So it's not exactly an offense that can be punishable b'dinei adam in court, but I'll be punished b'dinei shemayim. God will hold me accountable. So here it's very clear. God is holding me accountable. Dekenami dechsim mechatoli, because God said you've sinned against me. The thing is, ultamecha v'chatasi l'elohim, l'elohim v'lo adam. Remember how, I think it's quoting from a story of Yosef at Sadek, if I'm not mistaken. Let's see. I'm trying to find a pasuk over here.
I mean, there was no Jewish court in the time of Abraham and Avimelech.
Right.
It could only be this.
Well, are you saying it could only be God? Okay. Well, the reason.
Well, I mean, it's so early. I mean, you
right,
can't
but, the, but I but think you what know, the rabbis are trying.
They are sort of the legal term is inquiry notice, right? Inquiry notice. You know, you should, if someone says something and it's upon the in that case Avimelech to look into it, as you said, do the due diligence, because it's serious enough that it's worth looking into, not just taking one person's word for it. And was that a concept, a legal concept in that culture and that society at that time? Or is this something that's imputed later, centuries later through the rabbis?
Well, that's a general question and you have to ask about rabbinic law, which is a good question, Jeremy. A more traditionalist approach assumes that the rabbinic laws we're talking about were written down later, but were always part of the Torah's legal system. A more detached historical academic approach, some academics would posit that the intricacies of these laws were not yet fully developed during biblical times. So it's a funny thing. So when the rabbis look back, what they're trying to say is, well, the Torah leaves out a lot of details in a lot of stories. And so when the Torah goes out of its way for God to say, you have sinned to me, what is the message that the Torah is trying to give? Why couldn't he just say, you have committed a sin? Why did God have to say, you sinned to me? the implication, the inference that the Torah wants us to make according to this is you sin to me exclusively, but you haven't sinned to society to the extent that society would be able to give you capital punishment for it. That's what it's trying to derive.
Okay.
So just back into the flow of the Gemara. Let's see, where were we? So we said, lo, bidei shemayim. You're only punishable by God. They cannot be sin mechatoli. Okay. But Rava responds, utameich, bechatas yelokim, velokim v'lo la'adam, eladino muscle adam, achanami dino muscle adam. So again, I think that's quoting from the story of Yosef and Bereishis Lamedtes. That sounds about right. So Yosef says to Eishes Potiphar, the wife of Potiphar, that I am sinning to God. What do you think when Joseph was about to commit adultery with the wife of Potiphar, he meant, yeah, the sin of adultery is only a sin to God. I wouldn't be punishable in court. Societies back then even realized that you're supposed to punish someone for committing adultery. So you can't just say, just because Joseph said in the Torah, Chatasi Lelokim, I sinned to God, how can I commit this sin to God? Doesn't mean exclusively to God. That's not a good inference. Perhaps for the reasons that we raised before. So one last proof that Abai is going to try to bring against Rava, that you do not need to do your due, they don't need to go so far to do, the due diligence is a very easy thing to do. Isay Abai the Rava, Hagoy Gan Tzadik Taharo. So Avimelech says to God, after he abducts Sarah and God punishes him, Avimelech says, how can you punish me and my entire people for this one sin? You're going to wipe us all out because of that? God, and the way Abai understands the conversation in Torah there is that God was moda, God conceded. God said, all right, you make a good point. I'm not going to destroy you and all the people for this mistake that you made. However, Rava says, no, you're misreading it. God actually does respond. Also, to come a hadri love, God responds by saying, Va'ata hashev eshes ha'ish. When God says, now return Sarah to Avraham because he is a prophet, what is the implication? So this is going to be a little bit long-winded. We just turned the page, Testament Bays 9b. Eish Navihu did Tahader, Delav Navi Loti Hader. Wait, is the Pasuk coming to tell me that return Sarah because Abraham is a prophet? So you're telling me if Avraham wasn't a prophet, it'd be okay to commit adultery with his wife? That can't be what God is coming to tell me. Ela k'damar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani, damar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani, amar Rav Yonah. Some rather the rabbis tell us, "Hachi kamerle." This is what Hashem was responding to Avimelech's claim. Va'ata hashev es eshes ha'ish mikol makom. Return this person's wife. It doesn't matter who he is. If it's his wife, you shouldn't be with her. U'dika amar ha'goy gam tzarek taro. And to your point that how could I destroy the entire people? Halohu amar liachosihi, right? So he responds by saying, how can you destroy me? I didn't know. You said it was his sister. He said it was his sister. So God says, Navihu, not Navi in the prophetic sense, but Navi in terms of being a wise person. Abraham is a wise person. Navihu, Mimchalaman. He understood from what you said that he should lie to you. Right? So I'm not trying to get off the hook. He's saying, Hashem, how can you hold me accountable? How was I supposed to know that she was indeed somebody's wife and not just his sister? I could have known anyway. Well, the thing is, you kind of don't give people the option to tell you that they're married because they're afraid they're going to be killed otherwise. Because generally etiquette is when a guest comes to town, you ask them, can you use some food? Can you use something to drink? Do you need some provisions? The first thing you see, right? Imagine someone comes into shul. It's like a crazy scene. So you say, oh, can I get you a sitter during non-COVID times? Can I offer you a drink? Can I get you a coffee? Someone walks in with his wife, you don't say, so is that your wife or is that your sister? That's how you welcome a guest? That's how you welcome a guest that comes into your city, that comes into your shul, that comes into your domain? That's like the most rude thing possible. It's preposterous. However, that's basically how Avimelech welcomed people. He wanted them to sign up. Tell me, is this your wife or is this your sister? Can I have her? When you welcome people like that, you can't say, oh, well, how was I supposed to know it was your wife and not your sister? Well, if you're pushing people into a corner knowing they're going to be killed if they don't respond saying it's my sister, then you really brought that upon yourself because you're not letting people respond to you truthfully. And Mikan, but why do we bring this all up except for like, you know, just the really absurd notion over here? It's a really funny lesson. This is all to support Rava, who says you have to get to the bottom of the matter. You need your due diligence is a very high bar. You really need to get to the bottom of the matter. No, beyond a shadow of a doubt that what you're doing is permissible when you're engaging in matters that are so serious that they can incur capital punishment. Mikan sheben Noach nerag shaylo lamod v'lo laman, that a non-Jew, and it's not just a non-Jew, but here's the case, who doesn't do their due diligence, doesn't get to the bottom of the matter, and because of that, kills somebody because they thought they were allowed to do it, or takes a woman who he is not permitted to, will be liable to the death penalty. And it's considered bemazit. It's considered deliberate because, like Avimelech, you should have gone to the bottom of the matter, and therefore you were held accountable. Now, why doesn't God punish Avimelech in the end of the day? Could have been divine mercy. There's other reasons I'm sure Parsham get into. But really, from a strict halachic standpoint, Rav understands that Avimelech really should have been put to death.
He didn't do anything other than temporary kidnapping or something, right?
Well, I think
I think
he tried to sleep with her, but then they were stricken with that.
Exactly, and that's why Hashem says, "Alkein lo natatifah goy leha." Right.
So Henry suggests he didn't get to actually commit the sin in the end. He didn't get to do the maisa. So therefore, he's not held accountable. Okay, that could be an answer.
But Rabbi, just to clarify again, though, so definitely if it was a resident alien who made this mistake because he didn't check things out, he would certainly die. But if it's an Israelite who didn't check things out and he killed another Israelite, he would go to exile?
No, so I think actually, that's a good question. Based on the Gemara, because we saw the Gemara, what was it? Trying to find where the beginning of the parak is. I think we brought up on Zion Amid Beis, if I'm not mistaken. Or is it Chesam and Aleph? Anyway, we had this machlokis before, not in the context of a Jew, but also, here it is, on top of Zion Amid Beis. Same idea. Amar Rabba ima prat lo omer mutter. Amar li abai ima mutter anasu. This whole conversation takes place on Zion Amid Beis, 7b at the top, in referring to a regular Yisrael as well. So it seems to be across the board. Why does it specify a non-Jew? I think that's because that's the topic of conversation here. But seemingly this applies to a Jew as well. So there's some, I guess there's some equality for you right there. Okay. That brings us to the Mishnah. And wow, we are doing good time. We have 15 minutes left. That's good. Good timing on our part. Yashar Koach, everyone. Even with a current events conversation in the middle. So what I want to do is share one more idea with you by my good friend Nitzotze Hashas, a very enjoyable sefer. So I have to remind us, Nitzotze Hashas, right? I like using two svarim. One's Chashuki Chemed, which is practical halachic issues that emerge from the Gemara. I know that's what we're more in the mood for tonight, it seems like, but we already covered that. So what I want to share is this idea from Nitzotze Hashas, which is more like Chassidish Torah. Now, what I mean again by Chassidish Torah on the Gemara, it means more like whimsical and amusing things, but not stuff that really hold up to legal scrutiny. More like, you know, darshening a Shabbos morning sermon, but as you'll see what we're going to quote here, I wouldn't be able to get away, it wouldn't be advisable if I shared this in a Shabbos morning sermon. So let's, I'll read out loud to you. The question is as follows. Nearly tain tam al hod de isa de ben noach nash al shogi kamezin. So right, this is the question that we've all been asking, the question that Toby, I know you've emphasized. Why is it that a Jew who kills inadvertently gets to go into exile, but a non-Jew who kills inadvertently has to go, gets capital punishment, right? What's the sense in that? What's the sense in a distinction like that? That was our big question, right? Mm-hmm. I'll just prime you. You're probably not going to be satisfied with this either. But it'll be amusing at least. My first thing I like is when we say they quote the Sfarim HaKadoshim. That's the thing, and sometimes the Hasidic literature, let's say the Svarim HaKadoshim, the holy books say this, and then, but there's like no citation provided. So it's like, you know, if I basically want to make like a radical assertion, I could just say the Svarim HaKadoshim say that. But anyway, this actually is support. It's not such a radical idea. Here, the idea is that everyone who comes into this world, that Klabi Kadosh Baruch Kiviyav Kamo Lova V'Shoel, that our relationship with God is a lender, and we are a borrower from God. That God lends us the ultimate gift. God lends us our souls. So God is the malve, God lends us, and we are the love. All right, Henry agrees. It makes sense. So in Pirkei Avos, the rabbis tell us, is it Pirkei Avos? I think so. Hachenveni makif b'chol rotza lilvos yavo v'yilva. V'chein isa v'medrash rabba. The same idea comes up, we just said, in the medrash as well. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu chayavin li Yisrael mashalavu himeni. That the Jewish people are obligated to return to me that which I lent to them. Amar lehem sheyifru mashim chayavin li. V'nechi chayin yishal chayiv gam al shogeg toshol chayiv gam ba'onis. So it would seem, it makes sense, that if I am obligated to God, I owe God my soul, I am a borrower, and I, you know, and so this actually gets into Bava Metzia rules. There's all these rules about shomrim, about someone lending to another person. So if I am a shomer chinam, if I just, I watch something out of the goodness of my heart for you, then the only time I'm liable to pay back is if I was completely negligent, shia. If I'm a shomer sacher, if I'm a paid watchman, then I accept a few more responsibilities. In the event that it gets stolen, then I might be responsible for that. And then the most extreme version is if I'm a shoel, a borrower. If I borrow from somebody, and if you lend me an object, then I'm responsible no matter what happens when I'm in possession of that object. The exception to the rule is called balav imo, that if you, right? So if Henry, if you lend me something, you lent me a cow to work with, Bessie. And while, you know, I'm working with Bessie, you're working with me also. And then Bessie just collapses and keels over and dies. Usually I would have to pay back Henry for the cow because presumably, you know, I worked it too hard, whatever the reason is. But there's a special exception to called balav imo, that if the Baal, the owner, is with me at all times while I'm working with it, while this accident happens, I will not be liable to pay the owner. Ah, so what are we saying over here? So I'm a shoel of my soul. If I accidentally destroy another soul, right, then I should have to get capital punishment, return my soul to God, even if I did accidentally. A shoel, a borrower, who accidentally destroys the pikadon, who destroys the object they're borrowing, they are liable. However, here comes the drasha. Unnabi Yisrael came into Shechina Shor Beinehem. Since we're the Jewish people, the divine presence rests among us. It's like Hashem, who's the Baal, who is the owner, is always with us. It's always Baal of Imo. This only works in the case of Shogeg, right? If I deliberately destroy one's object, even as a shul, even if you're with me, there's no exemption over there. But if I accidentally destroy something, then I'm let off the hook if the master is present with me. Therefore, for the Jewish people, you could get off the hook from capital punishment. We get to go into gullus. We get to go into to exile because we did it accidentally since God's with us. You see where I'm going. You know, there's a lot of non-Jews, they're all very nice people, but the divine presence isn't with them. The Baalim, the owner, isn't with them the whole time. They had some toward the Shev Baalim, so they don't have the exemption of Balav Imo. Therefore, Chayavim al Shogeg Kemezid. Therefore, if anything happens accidentally, since they are a Shoel, a borrower, they are Chayav under those circumstances, whether it was deliberate or not deliberate. So that's, who is this? Agon Rav Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss. Oh, this is the Menachas Yitzchak. So, that's quite a drusha over there. And we learned about the shomrim at the same time, about a shoel. We had a time, lots of fun halachos. Toby, I know you're still not satisfied, but I thought it was amusing and interesting.
And we wonder why they hate us.
You know, yeah. It's a good point. It's a good point. You know,
how would you feel if you were one of them?
What was that?
You know, in a lot of cases, more in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, for example, there's exceptions that came in later, Rabbi, because of Ava, right? Because of not wanting to create hostility, right?
See, the thing with Ava,
the non-Jewish.
Though, right. So Henry, what Henry's pointing out is that there's a lot of times in the Torah that we kind of say, you know, even a doctor helping someone on Shabbos nowadays is Mipnei Ava, that we don't want to, you know, we don't want the non-Jews getting angry at us. So we'll break Shabbos to save their lives also. The issue with the Mipnei Ava, I don't know issue, but the thing about Mipnei Ava is that it's a pragmatic measure. That means in principle, we really still should have these strictures in place that we should be treating non-Jews differently. But Mipnei Ava, we are concerned about, you know, they probably won't really like the fact that we treat them less than a regular Jew or differently than a Jew, fellow Jew. So Mipnei Ava, we treat them the same way. But that's not an intrinsic value. That's really just the value of pikuach nefesh, and we don't want them to cause
more
problems.
Practicality.
Practicality. Yeah, exactly. But it doesn't speak to a value. Now, I think some people distinguish when it says Mipnei Darchei Shalom, maybe that's a positive value. Mipnei Ava is a pragmatic measure. You have to look at each place and see if that makes sense.
No. So the theoretical question would be, in today's times, if theoretically we had Ari Miklat and those structures set up, but now we have internet and instant communication, would some of these things that we're talking about here with treating Ger Toshav differently and so on, would the perspective change because of whether it's Darkei Shalom or Ava or other things like that?
So Rav Nachum Rabinovich, which is a Monday night class we have lined up. I know I keep saying we have things lined up. They are lined up. We just, you know, we'll get there eventually. He deals with a case about a neutralized terrorist. So he basically says, he makes an argument. I guess I'm giving it away, but we'll see if we remember by the time we get back to it. is that there is an intrinsic value to save a non-Jewish life, even to break Shabbos for them, I think he argues, based on the Ramban. I believe it's the Ramban that many people turn to. And the Meiri also, who says that everyone's like a Ger Toshav today because they're not pagans anymore. Again, what do you do with Eastern religions? I'm not really sure how that works out. It's very Western-centric. Mm-hmm. But then he says, whereas a Mechabel, whereas a terrorist who killed someone, you know, there he's on a different level. The only reason not to kill him is for pragmatic reasons, because BBC will see that happen, and then the UN, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So this is Rabbi Rabinowitz from Malia Domin.
Yes, this is Rabbi Rabinovich. In our Monday night class, we do Tshuvos, so we actually I have his Tshuvos right over here, Siach Nachum. And also Malom de Melchama is a special response just on military questions for Tzahal.
Yeah.
So God willing, we'll address that for a future class and whet your appetite. But any other questions before we conclude for the evening? Okay, Yashir Koa, thank you all for your contribution.
Thank you. That was really
and again,
good.
I appreciate all the connections to current events as well.
Thank you.
It certainly gives us what to think about. And hopefully we can use the what we learn here in the Torah to try to help us inform and make sense of what we see around us in real life.
Thank you.
Have a good Shabbos, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Good Shabbos.